What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Convincing Creatives. We're here in season three, and we have another awesome conversation coming at you. Today, we're talking to Oliver Fuselet. Oliver is the managing director of Great Guns, a production agency that works with commercials, music videos, and films. We are talking to Oliver about how he manages working with a roster of directors that includes folks like Melody Maker, David Nutter from Game of Thrones, and Dan Trachtenberg of 10 Cloverfield Lane. In addition to talking about the difference between commercial filmmaking, music video filmmaking, and of course feature filmmaking, we also talk about how you work to stay creative, to keep directors on track, and to understand that when you work with many different artists and directors, as Oliver does, there's going to be different styles that come up, different projects are right for certain directors, and how you manage all expectations coming from your clients. This is a great episode. There's a lot to dive into, and I think if you're someone who likes to work in the film industry, but of course also just being creative and managing lots of different clients, lots of different styles, aesthetics, visuals, this is going to be a really interesting episode for you. So I really look forward to you hearing this one. I think this is a really awesome conversation. And also we dive into the philosophical side as well of, you know, what it's going to look like in the filmmaking space in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Where's VR going to come into play, and how the democratization of filmmaking has touched every aspect of the filmmaking industry and the next generation of talent that's going to be coming up through it. So really appreciate y'all listening. Before this, I'll do a quick plug to my latest thing, which is Panda Barrett. It's a feature film. If you want to watch Panda Barrett, it's streaming on Tubi. It's a fun little project I made right before the pandemic, and we shot it right here in my home state of North Carolina. And it is about a rapper and his imaginary friend Panda Bear, who only he can see. So it is a very wacky film. It has got a lot of comedy, a little bit of drama, and I think it's going to be something that you may enjoy if you enjoy the kind of weirder side of filmmaking. So with that being said, I'm going to kick it over to the episode. Again, very appreciative of y'all listening. If you haven't already, subscribe on YouTube for the video episodes, and as well on any other platform you're listening to, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, anything like that. Really appreciate y'all. Thanks again. Here's the full episode with Oliver. So I know a little bit about what you've been doing, but I always like to start with everyone and just talk about how did you get your start, not only with what you're doing right now, but with like your foray into creativity, into film, into just keeping things interesting, if you will, on the screen.
Ah, it's interesting. Thank you. So I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I always really wanted to act and dance. So the moment I could get out of New Orleans and head to California, I did. And I pursued dancing and acting for a long time. And at a certain point, I realized maybe I should, I'm not making a living, so maybe I should get behind the camera. And I my first job was a receptionist at a commercial production company. I was very fortunate at that point to work my way up to a production assistant after 6 months on the phones. And that led me to a really young company called Propaganda Films, which has become a very iconic place where some of the biggest directors that are working today, from David Fincher to Michael Bay and Spike Jonze, and really amazing directors were at the time. It was a music video company just getting into commercials. So I was really fortunate enough to be handpicked by a producer who brought me in to production manage for a music video directed by David Fincher. It was for Paula Abdul's Cold Hearted Snake.
Awesome.
If you remember Paula.
Oh, yes.
A long time ago. So I just, I kind of just worked my way up. I stayed at Propaganda for quite a while. And, I just loved the whole process and the creativity and the people that I met. And, yeah.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, I find it really interesting. Like as a filmmaker myself, a lot of people dabble with music videos when they start just to kind of get a sense of how things work. Obviously, you can do certain things with music videos that you can't do with a feature film. What have you seen like through the music video industry that you apply to what you do today? Because I know there's so much creative liberation you can do sometimes, but also sometimes there's a lot of deadlines working with labels, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think even more so today because of COVID, I think applying a lot of the early kind of basic, what is the word? But just using these basic kind of resources in music video and applying them towards commercials today is really important, because you know, we're limited at the beginning of the pandemic. Everything was it was remote. The footprint had to be very small because of COVID and all the restrictions. So I think just going back to the basics of what, you know, music videos were about, which is, you know, just creating really great stories in a 3-minute format with music. I think it all kind of, you know, plays into creativity and being the best creative that you possibly can and finding solutions that you can get you to that most creative, you know, kind of element as a director, as a producer, as a company, as a record label.
Absolutely. And let's fast forward a little bit to what you're doing now with Great Guns. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? I know you're curating work with a lot of different directors, music videos, commercials. Sometimes these directors have feature films of their own they're doing. How do you kind of juggle all that stuff?
Yeah, it's a good question as well. I think, you know, really, we have quite a few. So Great Guns is a global company. We have 7 offices around the world, the main office being in London. I focus only on the United States. And 4 of our directors are feature film TV directors. One is Ilya Naishuler, who just had a #1 film called Nobody about 4 or 5 months ago. But the good news is that they're really great directors. Dan Trachtenberg is doing, you know, a really big series. So is David Nutter. But the fact that they're not available for commercials is a little bit of a juggling act. But I do think that that kind of adds to the kind of like cachet of the company. We have a lot of directors on our roster who are young and upcoming directors who are doing music videos to break into commercials. Some of them are doing amazing young, talented creatives who are doing directors who are doing great commercial work. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, absolutely. No. And that's interesting about Dan Trachtenberg, because I remember, this is a slight aside, but 10 years ago, probably 11 years ago, I was in film school. And I remember when his short called No Escape came out, which was about the video game Portal. And I was playing it at the time. And I had this guy in my class was like, you got to watch this. And I watched his short. And I just remember thinking, oh, wow, you can do a lot with a little, because he just, I think, cobbled that together. And I found that so inspiring. And like, that's been kind of a really interesting trajectory to watch him do that and then go into like Cloverfield Lane and things like that afterwards. So,
yeah, I do love that kind of, throughout, I think the commercial industry, starting really early on with like Ridley Scott, doing music videos and then going into doing Apple, which is one of the most iconic commercials, right. You know, his brother as well. I do love that kind of transitional kind of state that you use everything you apply early on in your career where you have no money and no time. And, you know, you just have to beg for people to like work with you. And if you're fortunate enough to get really great crew and do something really amazing and breakthrough creatively, it catapults you into, you know, superstardom in so many different areas of entertainment. I love that part of commercials and music videos.
100%. And I think that's so crucial, is like, if you're a director or any kind of, you know, artist, you need to make your own stuff to build your obviously portfolio. But also, I thought what was so cool about his short No Escape at the time was that, you know, he didn't have the name that he does now. And so I think it was brilliant to like tap into the video game fan base of Portal to tie into something that's already established. And, you know, I think that's a great move for anyone, you know, trying to break into something, is to kind of go outside the box a little bit, if you will. And kind of fast forwarding into that, how would you recommend like any director or anyone who wants to work in, you know, commercials, music videos, film, like contact, you know, people who are looking for representation or looking for, you know, producing power? How would you recommend that path and trajectory to anyone?
Yeah, that's a good question too, Evan. I think, you know, for me, I live in the commercial world. So advertising is what I focus on. I certainly understand and know the world of TV and movies, but I really focus on commercials. So I'm going to speak from that perspective. I think the first thing is that as a young director, I think you said something that's very interesting, and that is that, you know, think out of the box, know what's happening in the market that you're kind of looking at. If you're a comedy director, know what other comedy directors are doing or what is happening in the advertising, and then find your voice. And then when you don't just contact people just because you want to have a conversation and you're like, oh, I don't have really a big reel, I'm just getting started. You know, you know, be prepared, have a spec spot or have a spot or have a short or have, you know, something that will represent your voice and show your creativity. And if it's, you know, if it's just something very simple and didn't cost you a lot of money, if it's great and creative, people notice that. So I think the first thing is just be prepared and know who you are as a director, know what your voice is. Dan Trachtenberg has literally followed his kind of passion, which is video games. He loves it. You know, he was a critic for games early on. So I think using that is really great. And then when you do get an opportunity, really find companies that, you know, production companies that have rosters that are not exactly speaking to who you are, so that you're not one of 20, you're maybe just one of like one, so that people are like, oh, okay, well, so like a car guy, you know, I'm a car director and I do, you know, performance or special effects. Find those companies that really are lacking in those areas and specifically target those guys. And I think lastly, you know, I think there's something that a young director that I brought to Tool when I was running Tool of North America, one of the young directors coined a phrase, going to the gym. And it's kind of like, you know, going to the gym is really about taking anything and everything that you can possibly get when you're a young director and just starting out and trying to find the most exciting part of it that connects with you creatively and use it to, you know, work various parts of, you know, your creative, you know, kind of mind, whether it's like, well, you know, trying to figure out a new technique with a lens or a camera or a piece of equipment, working with an art director or a new casting director, all of those kind of elements help you get to the next level. So I say just, you know, always be, you know, on the lookout for opportunities. Say yes to everything. When you get to a point where you're literally like an established director, you'll know it. People will tell you that. So until that point, just keep always just moving and learning and experiencing. I think that's really important.
I think that's great advice, especially what you said about like going to the gym, if you will, as an artist and a filmmaker, because I mean, that's so crucial. I think so often like filmmakers, when they come out of film school, they're like, I'm going to make this thing. And, you know, a lot of people make that first project. And then I notice there's a lot of people who kind of drop off after that. And it's like, you know, they kind of maybe get a little disheartened because they made a feature independently and it didn't really do what they thought it was going to do. And then they kind of stop. And then I think people forget that, you know, when you're in your 20s and you make a first feature or, you know, a first short or a music video, that doesn't have to be the be all end all. That is your beginning point on hopefully a long journey, and your style will grow from there. Your perspective will grow from there and through there too. Like, you may look back at that 10 years from now and be like, oh, I wouldn't do that that way, but it got you to where you are now. And I think that's so crucial. Cause like, I remember when I made my first feature film after film school, I was so, you know, obsessed with making that the be all end all. And then we did film festivals and it was over, and, you know, it was successful in a smaller way, but it opened doors for me to do other things later. And, you know, I'm so much more happy that film was a stepping stone and it wasn't this be all end all thing. And it opened little doors to, you know, grow and change your style as a director. And I found that like interesting. And I've talked to other filmmakers at festivals and I've heard a lot of the same. And a lot of people realize too that, you know, maybe they do a feature and then they're like, oh, I actually love music videos, or I actually love commercials, or, you know, and I think that's an interesting trajectory as well. Something you mentioned too that I found interesting, I want to ask you about, when you talk about the roster of directors and being one of one, I think that's great, because I see a lot of, you know, agencies and places that have a lot of directors that sometimes do a lot of the same thing. But, you know, I like the curation, because it seems like with Great Guns, what you're going for is really having a director for any kind of task, but not, you know, a piecemeal thing where, you know, it's a copy paste. How do you like work with people and, you know, kind of keep them true to their style? I think that's obviously a big part of it. But, you know, where if you say, oh, I've got a brief coming in for this, I've got the perfect person because, you know, that's exactly what they do, you know, be it cars or be it VFX, etc.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question too. I think directors, young directors often, like you just mentioned, they have an idea of a film, or they have an idea of a short, or they have an idea of some spec, you know, commercial that they want to shoot, and they put all of their energy into it, not thinking about like who they are as a filmmaker are kind of thinking ahead 5 years or 10 years, who do I want to be? And I don't want to lose my train of thought, but you said something earlier. You know, David Fincher, early on when I met him, after leaving music videos and going into commercials, the movie industry came calling, and there was a film, I think it was Aliens, was his first film. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think the director previously had been fired. So it was a real big, they had a huge budget. A creative failure in the industry. You know, he was criticized, and, you know, but it made money. And I remember him saying one day that, you know what? Yeah, it was a failure critically, but people in 10 years are going to see the body of my work, and that's what they're going to judge me on. And he found a way to like learn from that experience. And I think that that's really an important part of like directors, young directors getting into this business, is not just take, you know, no's or the door shutting on you as like, you know, an insult or a failure. Look at them for, you know, learning moments in your career. And what is it that I lacked? What is it that, you know, they said to me, how do I apply that to something in the future? But again, getting back to your question, I think, you know, having directors on a roster, again, creative people like yourself, you know, kind of are all over the place, because that's the part of creativity. They're inspired by so many different things. So my job is to keep them focused. Advertising agencies know directors. So they'll say he's a comedy director, but he's a performance comedy director. He's not a special effects comedy director, or he's a two-shot director. So there's two people in a room or on a couch talking. Or, you know, that's a car director, but he doesn't do luxury cars, you know? So they have a way of typecasting you. So my job is really to focus directors. We have a big sales team. I'm part of the sales team. So we know specifically what agencies and brands to go to based on the directors that we have and the type of work that they do. So it's really just constantly, you know, kind of aiming and focusing and strategically kind of, you know, making pathways to get the directors real better and better and better and more creative.
Absolutely. And once you hone in on a director from your roster, what does that process play out like for, you know, a client or a brief or a commercial? Do you sit down and do a lot of creative with them, or do you kind of let them run off and do stuff and bring it back and kind of hone and, you know, chip away at it?
Yeah, that's, you know, the process of advertising is a very unique one in mm-hmm. that it's a bidding process, and there's right. normally a triple bid process. So once we're sent a board and the agency or the brand wants to bid a specific director on my roster, it really is about me or my executives getting as much information creatively, technically about the project or the vision that they sold to their client. And then somehow getting that information to the director so that he's prepared for a phone call, because that's the second part of it. You get a board, now you have to get on the phone with the creatives, and they give you their vision, and now they want to hear how you are going to see this vision. So that process is is one that takes a lot of conversation and, you know, kind of like spitballing with the director, making sure they're not going off the, you know, too far to the right or the too far to the left. And then after that process, obviously, I don't know if your viewers know or you know, but you literally have to do a treatment based on that call. And that once that treatment is done, which has everything in it that you would, you know, want to pitch, you know, even for movies, it has locations and talent and lighting and moods and tones. You have to do a follow up call with the agency to pitch to present that vision. And they make a decision based on that, if they're going to go with you or not, and a few other various, you know, variables. But yeah, so it is a process. I mean, really kind of like making sure that the directors are not going too crazy. There's always a budget, there's a budget. So you may have like, oh my God, I want to, you know, blow up five cars and like do a jump off of a cliff. And we're like, well, we can only afford one like explosion and <Yeah. laughs> there's no jumping off a cliff. So it's my job to keep them kind of in line on that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I can see a lot of moving parts with, you know, not only one project, but multiple directors over multiple projects. And
Yes. It's a juggling act.
Absolutely. How do you personally, you know, like to stay on top of that on the stressful days?
You know, I'm very fortunate in that early on, I found real estate as a kind of a creative outlet. Yeah. So any given day, I mean, right now I have a house in Pompano Beach that I'm renovating, and that really allows me to creatively, like, you know, kind of take any kind of frustration or any kind of, like, you know, it just makes me feel calm when I think about that. So whenever there's, you know, stress, I try to, you know, I try to apply it to that and really think about creatively what I want to do with the house. I'm also an avid tennis player. So hitting a ball rather than, you know, a computer or a desk or throwing a phone away is probably a good thing for me.
Yeah.
But I do love the creative process, and I love building, you know, young directors, you know, careers, and helping them, like, one project at a time, build a reel that people really look at and respond to and connect to creatively. So that's a real big passion of mine. So none of that seems to be stressful that much, you know, to be honest.
No, that's great. And I love that, like, having an outlet outside of, you know, commercials and film and stuff, like, that's so crucial. Cause I think sometimes, you know, what we all do here is so, you know, all encompassing that we forget to play around to tennis, go for a run, like, do just little things for our own mental health to just kind of, you know, make us better once we go back into whatever we're doing the next day.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think that's really important. You know, I do, I partnered with Little Black Book and Great Guns we started a series about 9 months ago called 5 and 30, Anything But Advertising, where we talk to the leaders of the industry and ask them 5 questions in 30 minutes, really is what it is. But for most of everybody, they all, like, use this, you know, this kind of time in COVID. It took them a while, but they really kind of understood that they were missing out a big part of their life. And one of them is really, like, feeding your passions that are, you know, outside of what you do 24/7, which is what we all do in this industry. We just, like, jump into it and it becomes our life. And
it does.
You know, we let holidays go by and birthdays go by and weddings and things like that. And you're like, oh shit, what happened?
You know? Yeah. Time has a funny way of just getting away from you when you're on a shoot or on a set or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that's super important. And like you said, also just, like, finding ways to feed your inner passion and outer passion. Like, I think COVID obviously has taught so many of us during lockdown, like, what is important in life, and just, like, a lot of priorities have shifted, and people were working, you know, smarter and not harder. And so I'm really excited, actually, for, you know, whenever the world kind of heals itself, and obviously that's an ongoing thing, but and we get back out there again, and you know, that's part of why I love doing this podcast, is, like, you know, I remember, you know, loving learning. You know, I've always just been a lifelong learner. And I think that this podcast for me is just a way to reach out to anyone who, you know, knows things and that I don't know. And I always love just learning and chatting with people, picking their brain, and just kind of getting a sense of what's going on out there across, you know, not only film, but just other artistic mediums as well. Like, you know, I've talked to some chefs on the podcast, and I've taken things back, and I'd be like, oh, wow, that actually applies to filmmaking. I never would have thought of that. And, you know, and it's a funny mind meld how that happens.
I love that. I think that that's a very interesting point, because I do think that inspiration comes from so many, you know, different places. And, you know, you just said, like, talking to chefs, and the truth is that is a really creative outlet, you know, and it does, you know, there are a lot of, you know, the preparation that you have to, the thought about, like, what you're going to make and how you're going to make that and how it's creatively displayed, you know, all those things are really a part of, and you can use that for filmmaking or almost every part of your life. And I think, you know, museums, and, like you said, like, going to the theater and, you know, going to a ballet or, you know, taking a painting class, like, I think all of those things are really important for young, you know, creative people who aspire to be in some type of entertainment, to just constantly feed their soul and feed their, you know, their creative, like, kind of, you know, muscles. I think it's just really, really important to always be, like, feeding that passion.
1,000%. And I remember too, like, in the episode from season 1, it was Jacob Boehm, who's the chef, and he had a theater background. And I remember that was interesting, obviously, with, you know, the film background I have, we had some similarity. And he actually rented this warehouse and put on a play across different rooms of the warehouse while also feeding people, like, a 4-course meal. And so they would go to different rooms, and there would be, like, the different parts of the play interacting with them at the table. They'd eat some food, it would have a tie into the play, and then they'd move to the next room and do the next course. And it was super interesting. And again, it's just a way that I would have never in a million years thought to do that, thought to, you know, meld the two mediums like that. And it just goes to show, like you said, inspiration truly does come from anywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting because what you just really explained is really like what has turned out to become an experiential, you know, experience where, you know, where the consumer is actually, you know, participating in the experience. And, you know, there's so many ways that brands and agencies now use experiential projects to like get to, you know, global consumers. And I love that. I think that's really, really interesting. And I think that's another part of, you know, advertising, which I really love. When I was at my last company, we were an integrated company. We worked with technology and innovation from AI to VR to AR, and we kind of married it to the, you know, the live, you know, live action narrative. And that whole combination was just really amazing and really kind of exciting, and still today really kind of gets my blood going. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I want to take a slight tangent into VR now that you mentioned it. I'm fascinated by VR. I know very little about it. I've got, you know, I have a couple experiences where, you know, I've put on like an Oculus and done some of those things. And a few of them have been like narrative films at film festivals. And that's been really interesting. I've got a buddy who is in that space and talks about like, oh, it's in its dormancy. You don't even know what's coming 10 years from now. And you know, some parts of me, I'm like, oh, it's so different from, you know, the 2D cinematic experience. It almost feels more video game-ish at times, but it's not quite a video game either. Where do you see that space going, particularly with like film and your directors and stuff like that?
You know, I think if you would ask me this, you know, 8 years ago, I'd probably say, I think it'll become a real major part of advertising. But unfortunately, the experience of VR is so singular that it's very difficult to, you know, it's not like you can be in a theater and everybody experience this, like, you know, this amazing, like, kind of experience. You're all individual in with a, you know, with goggles on. You know, it is an engine, it is a game engine run, you know, like kind of experience. And I think that's where it's huge. It's huge in gaming right now.
There's that like level of sensory overload that you just can't get the same way through, you know, the 2D screen. Like, you know, there's those little demos or games where you like are walking on a cliff and then you feel like, oh no, I'm going to fall, even though you know you're not actually going to fall.
Yeah.
Just 'cause the game tricks your senses.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe there's experiential things, and you know, I'm curious to see what happens with it. Do you feel like for this day and age, especially with, you know, I've looked at like the COVID creative segment of y'all's website, where do you feel like focus is going? Just because I feel like, you know, working through, you know, a crazy pandemic year and getting creative with like how you're doing work. I looked at some of the stuff on there. Do you feel like there is a, you know, it's all location bound, or I found some really interesting, you know, recuts of things on, you know, during COVID and ways of, you know, using Zoom to tell stories. And I feel like, you know, there is a little bit of a fatigue because everyone did it for a little bit of time. But do you feel like that may be here to stay when it's, you know, not all compressed into a few months where everyone's doing it? Like,
yeah, you know, I don't. So there's two things to unpack here. One is early on in the pandemic, you know, no one knew how to deal. You know, there was a 3-month period where everybody was just kind of like advertising agencies and brands and production companies were trying to figure out what are we going to do? And then. Right. Then we started thinking about how do we actually shoot remotely so that everybody's safe. And there were many, many protocols that were put in place to do that. And I think that lasted about maybe, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 months. And there were some amazing productions, you know, mounted and great creative. And it was really wonderful. However, I think moving, you know, a year and a half later, what we've learned is that we don't necessarily... Everybody doesn't have to be on the set any longer. So I think from a footprint perspective, clients aren't sending 15 people. Agencies aren't sending 25 people, which was all just adding to, you know, the budget, which was just ridiculous. And having that many voices, most everybody didn't have a voice anyway. There was always one or two guys that really had the final say. So I think that from a perspective of like budgeting and just, you know, straight like conversational like direction creatively, I think it's going to continue to allow people to watch remotely that are necessary, but not be at the shoot. It'll streamline the process, and I think creatively will allow a director and the creatives to do their job a little bit better. I think from a perspective of like directing, I think it's important that directors interact with creatives on the set. It's just a really key function in how you like, you know, turn to somebody and go, what do you think about that? Like, right. As opposed to, you know, going to your AD and getting on a, you know, walking to the monitor and looking on the Zoom and then having a conversation. And so I think it's really something that is going to continue. I don't think that part is going to continue. I think their creatives are going to continue to go, but very small footprints. And I think that's a real important component of making really great work is being there, collaborating, you know, talking, seeing, feeling, experiencing everything on set. I think this is the key. So I think it's going to continue. I think we're going to see more and more sets that are live, that are, you know, location driven or, you know, stages or whatever. And people are going to participate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the old saying, sometimes there's too many cooks in the kitchen and it just, it'll slow things down. And if there's a world where you can have, you know, a lower budget, fewer people and things don't get bogged down as much, that almost sounds like a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then speaking of like things being kind of virtual, obviously now in 2021, do you feel like there is that same need to be based in like New York or LA or anything to work in the industry and do things like that? Or do you feel like now, you know, directors can kind of come out of anywhere, producers can come out of anywhere, work from anywhere and just like fly to places?
I think it's great. Yes. And I think that's here to stay for the most part. I mean, I think, again, there was just so many learnings, you know, financially, big corporations, you know, there are buildings in New York and Dallas and Los Angeles that are vacant due to the fact that, you know, it's very expensive and the overhead's, you know, ridiculous. And people are coping and dealing very well working remotely. And I think so I think from that perspective, no, I think we've learned a lot. And I think people are. I'm a managing director of a rather large company in America, and I live in Florida, and we have small office in Los Angeles, and we're doing very well. We have a couple of people in the LA area. One of our executives just moved back to London. So she's going to continue to be an executive, and we just have to make the timing work. But yeah. I think a director can be anywhere, you know? I think once we open up though, once, you know, there is something to, and again, you can get on a plane, you can go anywhere, but what big part of my job is also sales. And that's, you know, connecting with, you know, agency creatives and, you know, people who run large advertising agencies or small, very creative agencies. And that, you know, normally is done on a face-to-face and, you know, we meet for lunch or breakfast or dinner, or we throw parties or whatever. So I think as it opens up, I think there's going to be more of that. But again, I don't think that we're ever going to go back to that. Like, oh, we have to be a 9-to-5, you know, we have to be, you know, in at a certain time and punch a time clock. And no, I think it's done, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of times too, like, you know, the horse and buggy going to the car. I know that's like an antiquated example, but a lot of times when there's a big shift, we don't as society typically go backwards after the shift has occurred.
Yeah,
I find that definitely interesting. And then kind of on the same page, where do you see like the democratization of filmmaking coming into this? Because I find, you know, like with my own foray into filmmaking, I grew up in the 90s and, you know, VHS cameras were around and, you know, they certainly weren't the same as like DSLRs and 4K cameras like any kid can get their hands on now at a Best Buy. But what do you find, like, there's probably definitely more people getting into filmmaking than ever before. Do you see that coming down the pipeline in the future as like there's way more work and audience to sift through? Or do you see that as a good thing where, you know, there's more creativity going to come out of that because it's not, you know, region locked to Los Angeles anymore?
Yeah, I think I love the idea of finding new talent and seeing new work and be inspired by you know, the kid who's from, you know, Katy, Texas, who, yeah. you know, had an iPhone and, you know, had, you know, was inspired by Spielberg to do some really great little short. I think that's amazing. And I think that's going to, it is happening more and more, not only because of the fact that, you know, there's these really great, you know, apparatus to shoot things like cameras. I mean, there's 8K cameras now that are yeah. handheld. Like it's unbelievable. But
yeah.
I think the idea of having so many streaming services and so many outlets to content. If you look at the North American map and you were to put, you know, like kind of filming hubs right now, it's crazy. Not so much for commercials, but for content series, yeah. streaming series, you know, Vancouver, Toronto, you know, Atlanta, Orlando, Los Angeles. I mean, they are on fire shooting content. So I think the more creative people that come into the industry, I think the better. I think we're going to see a lot of diversity, and I think that's happening more and more. I love that part of it. So I think that that's going to give way to, you know, a whole generation of, ethnically diverse, culturally diverse people who have a point of view that could change the kind of the dynamic of what we see in film. And I love that. And I also think that, you know, the universe has a way of, like, you know, kind of siphoning through, you know, the good, the bad, and the great, you know?
Yeah.
So I say, give everybody an equal opportunity. And I think the more technology and the more, the more devices that people can use to tell a story, I think the better. And I also will add that, using an old video machine or something from the 80s or the 90s that was used, an old lens, those things, when you use them in the right way, in the right kind of, you apply them to the right kind of commercial, in this case, our film, they could be really great. They could be a real great technique to tell a story. So I say, everything old is new again.
Yeah, they add such a texture and aesthetic yeah. to what you're doing. Like you said, if you use them the right way. And I think that's what's interesting for, you know, commercials and brands or filmmakers or anyone, just because, you know, yes, you can get your hands on, like you said, the big 8K camera. But at the end of the day, like, what is your story? Because I think so often that gets lost in the sauce, I like to say. And just, you
yeah.
know, a lot of people yeah. think, you know, we can get the best cinematography in the world. It'll look pretty. It'll be, you know, 8K resolution, you can see the hair on someone's head.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, it's like, that's a nice thing. It adds something, no doubt. But I feel like the bigger picture at the end of the day is like the storytelling aspect and what you're actually trying to say. And, and a lot of times too, how does it leave someone feeling? Like, a lot of times I'll see an ad and it'll leave me with a distinct feeling. Another question I have that's kind of a fusion of film and commercial at the end of the day. I know people have talked a lot about ad-based video on demand platforms getting bigger and bigger. Obviously, like, you have subscription stuff like Netflix and HBO, which have no commercials, but then you have stuff now like Tubi, which was just bought by 20th Century Fox. And like, now that's getting a lot of investment. And people are saying a lot of these, free advertising platforms to stream movies and stuff are going to be the next wave. I've actually seen a couple commercials tailored to very specific genres of whatever I happen to be watching on some of those platforms. Do you see any of that, like, super specific curation kind of being a path forward in the industry?
I mean, I do, but I think it's a lane in advertising, you know what I mean? Because I don't think it's going to be so specific. I think, look, I mean, you know, there's so much AI that's going on that we don't even know about. I mean, you know, you type something in on your computer in Google, and the next thing you know, you're seeing like 15 ads for, you know, a steel table for your kitchen.
we each have our own algorithm. Like,
exactly. I do think that that's a bit, I think it's going to be a big, you know, I think it's another outlet in reaching consumers and mm-hmm. and selling product. I think it's really important. I'm in the ad business. So I love the idea of how people creatively connect with consumers and sell their product. I think it's really an amazing way of kind of telling stories. And if it's great creative and people are like, oh my God, like, I've never seen anything like that, or it makes them cry or feel, or it motivates them to get up and get out of their house and, you know, run and lose weight, I love all that. So I think specifically, like, targeting certain demographics, and I think it's I think we're going to see a lot of that.
Definitely. To bring things kind of back around full circle, I know you mentioned working several jobs when you first got started, acting in front of the camera, behind the camera, obviously now working with Great Guns. What are you thinking when you look at everything in the totality of what you've learned to give you like a greater appreciation across the board for what you're doing now? Do you feel like there's any key moments, or do you feel like there's just an amalgamation of knowing what does work, what doesn't work? You know, being in front of the camera maybe gives you, you know, a perspective that you take now behind the scenes, anything like that?
Yeah, that is a really great question. I mean, I think I have, you know, two answers to that. One is, I think the great Dr. Maya Angelou said it best when she said, when you get, you give, and when you learn, you teach. And I think those words are important. So if you live by that philosophy, the only way that you can give is that you have to get. So you're constantly trying to take in information and learn, be motivated and inspired. And if you want to teach, you have to learn. And again, it goes back to just knowing what's out there in terms of young directors and what they're doing and how are they telling stories and what format are they telling stories. So knowing all that, I think, is really, really important. Also, there was a TED talk that I watched years ago by a young woman named Emily Wartnick, and it was called Multi-Potentialite. And the whole philosophy is that we are not one thing. We can have, you know, multiple passions, and we can use all of those things towards the greater good. And I think constantly feeding those passions and getting to know yourself and those passions the best that you can, again, I think feeds into it. So to simply answer your question, is I think, you know, for me, the body of experience, the people that I've known, the situations that I've been in, the failures, and I've had many, you know, I've learned through all of those. And I think that what keeps me going is that I know that it's just a process, and that if you take that moment and you look at it from a perspective of like, how do I learn from it? Or what do I get? What did I get from it? And how do I give that to somebody else? I think you will continually like be passionate about what you do and enjoy your life. And that's kind of where I am right now.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And just to land the plan, this is always kind of my last question I ask everyone. What advice could you give, you know, to your past self who's looking into the future, wanting to do this for a living? And then on the flip side of that, how do you keep yourself creative now in this current day and age?
Oh, wow. So I would say to my younger self, be fearless, like don't question, be curious, say yes to life. You're going to be okay. You know, we just don't know that when we're young. The other side of it is that, one of the things that I think that we as babies come into the world with is like an inspiring amount of creativity, whether it be curiosity or painting or, you know, telling stories. We were able to, as a kid, to like, you know, play by ourselves and, you know, in a cowboy, you know, land, or a world of, you know, a fantasy with dragons and all that. And we kind of lose it along the way. And what I've kind of been doing for the past like 10, 15 years is trying to feed that, those passions that I had as a young kid. I loved art. I loved painting. I am the worst painter ever, but I still do it. I just, I don't know why. It's just one of those things that just makes me excited. And I paint watercolors and anything that I can do. I paint thank you notes, the front of paint, thank you notes. And they're very simple. They're not like amazing, but I also, the whole feeding the passion of, you know, creativity from, the real estate investments and really kind of picking out, you know, a specific toilet or a tile or a faucet. Like to me, it's like, I would get up at 2:00 in the morning before work and go, you know, and it was like, you know, it was like, I was making a decision between, you know, which actor to choose for a feature film or not. So
I love
again,
that.
I think just feeding those passions, I think, is really great. And just keep, you know, just say yes to life.
Yeah, I always come back around to like a creative mind wants to be creative. It doesn't always care how you're doing it, whether, like you said, it's doing home renovations or, you know, casting in a film. It's a muscle, and it demands to be worked out and used, and it doesn't want to just sit idly by and do nothing. And so I think that's so key, is just always finding a way, whether it's in your work or your personal life, just to keep that part of you alive. Because, you know, some people have the analytical brain. A lot of us listening to the podcast, I'm assuming you have the kind of more creative brain.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, again, the type of thing that just demands to be used and seen and worked out. And I love that. Oliver, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, Evan. This is fun. And thanks for having me, and good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can folks keep up with you if they want to keep up with the work you're doing?
You know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on, LinkedIn. So, you know, Oliver Fuselier, I think I'm Oliver Blue on Instagram, and Facebook, just Oliver F. But certainly keep, look at our website, greatguns.com under USA, and look at the rest of the world as well. But yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you again, everyone, for listening. I really appreciate it. Keep tuned for the next episode and keep it creative out there. Thanks again.
Keep reaching for the stars. Appreciate
See
it.
Y'all.
Really great.